the ways that you're photographed, the ways that you're talked about when you go to a fitting for a shoot, you know, what they decide to put you in and how they want to frame that. Like all of the things around the music are the things that I'm hypersensitive to. And this whole project really kind of started for me in the wake of a band breakup and wanting to figure out who I am as an individual person. And I feel like I'm still in many ways on that journey, trying to figure that out. But I'm very aware of just the way women musicians are talked about in general. And for that reason, I'm like very careful about, I know, I write all the music, I play most of the instruments. I really want to feel like I can clearly take ownership over the things that I'm making. But also, it is a collaborative process, and I want to also give credit where credit is due, and the people I work with are very important to me.
That was Lorraine, and this is Shiros, a podcast with a mission to turn up the volume of women's voices in music across genres and generations. I'm Carmel Holt, and what you're about to hear is a previously aired interview from my syndicated public radio show, Shiros Radio. Shiros is a deep dive into the experiences and perspectives of women and gender expansive folks in a still overwhelmingly male-dominated music industry. It's a space where we discuss challenges and triumphs, how far we've come, and how far we still have to go. Telling our stories is the first step to making music better for everyone. This week's guest is a gifted multi-hyphenate, a multi-instrumentalist, producer, songwriter, composer, and performance curator whose albums build worlds and even multiverses. And to hear Brooklyn native Taja Cheek tell it, she was an explorer of musical worlds from the beginning. Classically trained on recorder, cello, and piano, Taja taught herself to play bass so that she could play in bands to become part of the rock, DIY, noise, and experimental music scene in New York City. While studying music in college didn't exactly go according to plan, she did become music director of her college radio station, which further expanded her sonic palette and inspired her to work with loops and samples. The interplay of lo-fi and technology and her own myriad instrumental abilities and influences lay the groundwork for a collage-like approach for her musical project, Lorraine, and she put out her self-titled debut in 2017. Finding trusted collaborators in Andrew Lapin and Ben Chapoteau Katz, Taja continued to construct, deconstruct, and build out her musical universe with her critically hailed sophomore album, Fatigue, in 2021. Now, Taja Cheek is back with her bold and masterful third Lorraine album, I Killed Your Dog, an incredible journey into the multiplicity of sound, emotions, and identity. I'm thrilled to welcome Taja Cheek, aka Lorraine, as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Lorraine, a.k.a. Taja Cheek, welcome to Shiros. Congratulations on the new album, I Killed Your Dog. Saying that title out loud, I'm like, whoa. But yeah, congratulations on another masterpiece of an album.
Thank you. Yeah, it hurts for me to say too.
But I appreciate that. And I appreciate especially women who want to push boundaries and want to explore things that are jarring or ugly or not stereotypically feminine. It's harder for us to do those things, let's say.
Yes.
So when I first saw the album title, before I even listened to the music, I thought to myself, okay, there's a story here. There's something to be said. There's a statement being made. But rather than me putting the words in your mouth, can you talk to us a little bit about that and how you came to choose this as the title for your third album?
Yeah. I mean, the song came first and it just kind of flowed out of me, and I was really shocked, and I tried to use other words, and those were the words that stuck. And when we were thinking about the title for the album, my collaborator Ben said as a joke, like, that should just be the title of the album. And the more I thought about it, the more it really made sense to me on a number of levels. I love dogs. All my collaborators love dogs. Dogs are like a huge part of the recording process, actually. And I was just thinking about what it meant to hurt people that you're close to and what that feels like. And I wanted the title to approximate that feeling and for it to be really immediate and really visceral.
Yeah.
And I also, I don't know, I'm skeptical of my music being treated with white gloves or like, you know, everyone has been so thoughtful with the way that they treat my music. And I wanted to just be a little messier and a little rougher and harder to digest and consume in this way. And to present myself, I'm a human being, you know, everybody makes mistakes. And I wanted the title to really invoke that in a real visceral way.
Wow. Yeah. I feel like we could spend an hour talking about just that. It's so thought provoking because it's so complicated too. Like, you had so much critical success with the last record, and congratulations on all of the acclaim for Fatigue. So well deserved. But there is this thing, right, that happens, I think, for any artist, you know, of any gender, any identity, any genre, like you get that kind of success. And then what is the follow up to that? What are the expectations that people have of you going in? And what are the boxes or the sandboxes that people have set up for you to play in? And again, my hypothesis, I think it's probably pretty well documented at this point, is that women have a harder time breaking out of a lane.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely. Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking a lot about womanhood, I think, in general, when I was making this record, and the ways in which femininity, all the quotes, is accessible or inaccessible to me, especially in the context of relationships. And also just looking at the world around me and like the really despicable political moment we're in, and thinking about the ways that I express femininity or haven't in my life because of safety, because of the ways that I'm looked at as a Black woman or whatever, and feeling like I really learned so much about womanhood through queer friends or friends that would later describe themselves as queer or trans women specifically, and how I'm like now really processing all of the things that I had been learning, especially as a younger person. And just in taking all of this information, and now I'm like, oh, how do I want to express myself? What agency do I have over my body and the ways that I express myself? Like, how does that tie to my expression and understanding of my gender? And wanting that to be really nuanced. And there's just so much to learn from queerness in general about like how to do that. And yeah, it really kind of hit me in the making of this record, especially.
I relate to everything that you're saying. And I feel like this moment is both, like you were saying, you know, it's like politically despicable, I think was the word that you used, right? Despicable. And then at the same time, you know, it's just such a fascinating moment. Like I'm quite a bit older than you are, and queerness and gender and the binary and all of these things are really getting upended by this generation. And I love to see it. It's like, it's so liberating, and it makes me feel like I can exhale. And I love the questioning, and I love the fluidity. I do think it's going to take a moment before the dust kind of settles and we find balance again. And, you know, we're humans. And so we want to categorize, we want to label, we want to put things into boxes. It helps us, you know, somehow systemically keep things in order. So it's an interesting thing to play with. And to your point about your music and how this intersected with making this record, I would love to hear how that ended up showing up, whether that was lyrically or sonically or any of the choices that you made along the way, whether that's in hindsight or in process.
That's a good question. I'm still not sure. Yeah, I feel like it takes me a while after making a record to really kind of understand in that level of detail.
Yeah.
I think it was more of an internal process than anything else.
Right.
Of just kind of understanding who I was when I was first writing some of these songs. Some of them are quite old, or the seeds of them were older. And so I found myself really kind of talking to a younger version of myself a lot, like a teenage self, and all these ideas I had about what it's like to be a partner to someone else and who I am without that, and what it means to be alone and what it means to be with a person. And yeah, just realizing that certain choices I was making about the way that I would present myself to the world weren't self-determined, really. It was more just me responding to a world I didn't agree with or believe in. And yeah, just like starting the process of trying to define womanhood in my own terms, I guess.
Womanhood and defining or redefining your womanhood. Put it in the framework of music for you as a musician, as an artist.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I feel like it has more to do for me with the things that aren't explicitly musical, right? The ways that you're photographed, the ways that you're talked about when you go to a fitting for a shoot, you know, what they decide to put you in and how they want to frame that. Like all of the things around the music are the things that I'm hypersensitive to. And this whole project really kind of started for me in the wake of a band breakup and wanting to figure out who I am as an individual person. And I feel like I'm still in many ways on that journey, trying to figure that out. But I'm very aware of just the way women musicians are talked about in general. And for that reason, I'm like very careful about, I don't know, I write all the music, I play most of the instruments. I really want to feel like I can clearly take ownership over the things that I'm making. But also, you know, it is a collaborative process and I want to also give credit where credit is due. And the people I work with are very important to me and they're men. But it's a slippery slope. And so I think I may be like very aware of it, maybe over aware of it. And I'm always worried about, I don't know, just being able to claim the music as my own. No one has ever really threatened that in explicit ways, really. But I just know how it works. And I'm just not going to take any shit.
Yes to that. Hell yes to that. We have Taja Cheek with us, Lorraine, on Shiro's. The new album is I Killed Your Dog. Where should we start today? Let's play a clip of a song. Anything pop into your head based on the things that we've already been talking about?
I don't know. Maybe the title track. That's a good place to start.
The title track to I Killed Your Dog, third album for Lorraine Taja Cheek, our guest today on Shiro's. I'm Carmel Holt. I always love to talk about how women come into music, their journey with the instruments that they play. You started off, if I'm getting this right, with classical. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and like how you ended up here?
Yeah, I studied piano for a long time. Well, I guess it seems a little silly to mention, but it was a really big part of my life. I was very serious about the recorder as a kid, and my first music teacher was Irish, and so we would play a lot of Irish folk music on the recorder, and I really continued for years in trios and quartets. Usually it was like baby me and a bunch of other teachers just sitting playing Irish folk music. And that was like a really big part of my life. But beyond that, I studied piano and cello, and then I started teaching myself bass so I could play in bands. And I didn't know of any women bass players at the time. And I think at the time I started playing the bass, I found an old Breeders CD in my basement, and then learned about Michelle Indigo Cello and, you know, so many other people. But I really did it because I was like, I don't know who to look up to. And through playing, I learned about so many other musicians that I love.
So that was helpful for you to see it represented elsewhere. Yeah,
definitely. But I also just love the music.
So then you did pursue music in a formal way as far as higher education, right? You went to Yale for a minute.
I did. It wasn't really like a performance degree. It was more history and culture, but it was very 18th century. And I really, truly hated it. It was pretty awful. Yeah. My classmates were mean. They weren't interested in other things. Like some of them were honestly just straight up racist and sexist. I hated it, but I found my way through working in the School of Music, which I loved. I was working in the recording studio and we recorded degree recitals. And I spent a lot of time in that period just writing music alone in my room. And I still refer to that music now. And I also worked in the radio station, which was like my whole life. And it was the best thing ever.
Were you on the air?
I was. I had a couple of shows. I had a punk show and I had a show where I just played whatever I wanted.
Oh my God.
But I threw shows. That was like my big thing. I was a music director there for a while. It was really fun.
I love to hear that. Yeah, we really need more women on the mic and also behind the scenes in the radio world. That's part of the mission of the radio half of what I do is like to amplify that. We're still like very, very outnumbered by cis white men.
Yes.
So it's always awesome to hear of a fellow radio person. That's great. So you continued to study, but you were disillusioned. I just thought of, you know, Rhiannon Giddens. Have you ever met her?
Yeah, of course.
We had a long conversation about that experience for her going to conservatory. Esperanza Spalding, same thing. You know, racist, sexist institutions where we go trying to make our way in the music world is really discouraging and disheartening. So how did you push through that, do you think?
I remember the moment I quit the major and did other things. You know, you have to take a world music class, which, you know, is already like a weird premise for a class. But to their credit, the professor really spent most of the class breaking down why the whole premise of the class was problematic. And we were studying like a specific African drumming pattern. And someone just raised their hand and they're like, I'm sorry, I just think all African drumming is shit. I think I blacked out. I got up and I was like, I'm dropping this major now. And I ended up, I just focused more on the other ways that music was entering my life through the radio station. I wrote for some music magazines and I was just writing a lot of music in my room. And that ended up being really formative and important for me. All the music that I was listening to at that time was, I was just listening to so much. Because we had to digitize the music collection at the station, which is all CDs. And so I would just like sit for hours and just listen to whatever was there.
Oh my God.
I felt like a sponge and I befriended a lot of other people through listening to music, less so playing music. And a lot of those friendships I still have.
When did you first find your tribe in terms of music and start collaborating with others?
You know, in high school, I had a collaborator that I was very, very close with, and we would wander the hallways singing melodies and learning songs. And we went to they called it a laptop school, which just meant that everybody had to have a laptop. But we would download a lot of music. So I was just like listening to so much at that period. And I discovered this huge stash of CDs in my basement from my dad. We were just voraciously consuming everything that we could.
He was a radio guy too, right?
He was, yeah.
Yeah. Kiss FM. Yes.
Yeah. Very New York.
Yeah, very New York. I wanted to read this quote. I'm not really sure where I got it, but it was talking about the song 5 to 8 hours a day. How do you say this? Is it WWAG?
It stands for something. I don't know if I'm ready to reveal that yet, but
okay.
It's an inside joke.
Okay. All right. So the interviewer, I want to say this was maybe from Pitchfork, said that it was rooted in Black American folk. How familiar were you with that? And you said that you never picked up a guitar and just made a folk song. Obviously, all American music, you say, comes from Black music too. I don't want to be confrontational, but I know a lot of Black women who play guitar and I wish they had more visibility on their music. Throwing the ball over to you, Taja. Let's talk about Black women and guitar.
Yeah. I think since I was young, I listened to a lot of rock music and it was something I loved. And especially in Brooklyn at that time, that was just like a big part of the scene and I was in it. And, you know, thankfully I didn't have any complexes about it. Because it was a very white scene, a very male scene. And I always had my crew of people that I would go to shows with and we would talk about it and, you know, joke about how white it was. But yeah, that was just always a part of my life. And in other moments, I felt Tokenized sometimes, where I felt like people would sort of look at me like an alien because I was like a woman that played instruments, but also like a Black woman that played instruments. And so I really, I think, tried to just get away from that as much as possible because it's not like spectacular. There's a lot of women that play instruments. But yeah, I don't know. I think we're in a time of like a lot of white woman rock bands. There's like a lot of them. And I wish that it were like a more diverse moment. Like specifically, I wish that more Black woman rock musicians were being uplifted in this moment where like all of these barriers are being broken and all of the gatekeepers are being like revealed for being bigots. And I wish that that could also be reflected more in just like the way the market operated or what people were being exposed to. Yeah, I guess that's where I was coming from.
I wonder what it would take to do that.
That's a great question. Yeah.
Part of the reason why I do this is to ask these questions and to also like dig for some solutions, some answers. I believe really strongly the answers are already here somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
And amazingly, this is the first time, I think, in about 3 years of doing Shiro's that somebody has said what you just said. And it's weird because it's like, even though there are so many white girl rock bands and in indie rock, a lot of them come on this show and are still talking about how they are still fighting against a lot of the same bullshit too, you know?
Totally.
But I'm aware through having these conversations that there's that level of it. And then if you're a Black woman, it's even worse, you know? It's just like there's always that. And if you're a Black woman, it's even worse. If you're a person of color, it's even worse. It's
like, I mean, I feel like sometimes these conversations get really flattened online.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I don't know, there's a lot of nuance to be had.
Right,
about
right.
How these things operate. And yeah, I'm sure it does suck also to be a white woman with the guitar in a rock band now. And all of those statements can be simultaneously true.
Totally. Yeah. No, they are all true. Yes.
Yeah.
They are all true. Yeah. But it's good to like acknowledge the privilege that comes with being a white woman in rock.
Yeah.
So anyway, complicated, but really cool to talk about and important to talk about. And when you say like these conversations get flattened online, this is not to toot my own horn or anything, but it just makes me feel good about having a conversation, you know, that's like not just blast and respond. And, you know, any communication around all this stuff, I think, is really good. But I think it's even more helpful to talk about it with human voices. I don't know.
Yes,
what do you think?
Definitely.
Speaking of talking about things, what has been your experience so far talking to people about your work? This is something that I love to cover in this show. There's this meta aspect to what I do. There's also a shortage of women and queer folks doing the journalism, doing the bookkeeping, doing the history documenting, and by the way, also doing the curation. Congratulations on all the curatorial stuff that you're doing in New York.
Thank you.
PS1 and BRIC, Celebrate Brooklyn, among other things. You have some knowledge about that side of work, of whether that's like on the journalism side or like on the curatorial side, like presenting to the public. So on both sides, I'm curious, maybe experiencing it as an artist and then being on the side of it where you're being given the opportunity to create space for others.
I think journalism is really important. And music writers are really important. And the historians are really important. Like all these parts of the music industry that I feel like maybe are being given less attention and less resources are really, really crucial. I think they're really important. Like every one of the roles that I just mentioned, like they'll have a different insight or perspective or context for my music than I can provide. So I really like love that part of it and feel like I learn so much from each interview that I do about myself and about my music and my practice and like what it means. And I think that's really important. And I feel really lucky that I have been able to engage with that on my own terms, I feel like so far, and have been pretty, I feel like probably uncompromising about it, just because, you know, I see how easily women musicians, women of color, specifically Black women, like their work can get flattened into like a headline that's like, meet the Black woman that's shattering expectation, you know, just like whatever that is. And I wanted to really talk about the work and what I'm doing and what I'm thinking and feeling. Yeah. And I feel like I've been given that opportunity, and I want everybody to be given that opportunity because it's so important. I believe in writers and in thinkers, and they're crucial to understand what's happening in the moment, but also like what happens like a year from now or 5 years from now or a decade from now. The history is being written and being like entered into the record now. So yeah, I feel lucky, but it also makes me really sad at times because I want other people to feel that way about their story. And it's about having agency, but it's more than that. Like, I don't need to agree with what other people say about my work. Like, I probably won't if I read everything, you know, like that's fine. I just want them to like really engage with it and think about it.
We have Taja Cheek with us on Shiro's, and her new album is I Killed Your Dog under the moniker Lorraine. Do we call Lorraine a band? Is it you? Is it a collective? All of the above?
I really struggled with that on the last album cycle. It was a problem that I didn't even think about addressing, to be honest. And then I just kept thinking about Sade. That's like a person in a band. And there's lots of examples of that. But a friend of mine who's a curator and designer was talking to me about identity kind of being on a spectrum, that like I and we can be on a spectrum. And that was like really helpful for me to just reorient my thinking around it, where I'm like, yeah, Lorraine is me. It's also a band. It's also a collective of individual people. And it's a little messy to describe, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's great. Why don't you take us to another track? We were talking about pushing boundaries before. Is there a song on this album where you feel like you pushed some boundaries or you stretched in a new way that you're proud of?
5 to 8 hours a day for me is that track. I was talking to Ambrose, who also plays on that track, and he's like, have you ever heard this Joni Mitchell track? And I hadn't, but the instrumentation was guitar, trumpet, pedal steel, which is like pretty much the exact instrumentation of this track. And like, I really don't know Joni Mitchell's work that well at all.
Oh my.
And it was like this
God,
really
Tasha.
Funny moment of like this crazy synchronicity. And I'm like thinking about rock music and who has ownership over it. Anyway, it was like all of these things were converging in this track. And it felt like it was really meant to be in a way. I've never really written a song like this before.
And it's one of my favorites.
Thanks. I think it might be one of my favorites too, at least right now.
People in the garden, dressing up for revolution. Can't keep down with constitution.
To 8 hours a day, WWWAG. I don't know. I tried it before as WWWAG. We'll find out. Maybe, maybe we won't. We have Taja Cheek with us, Lorraine, on Shiro's Radio. The new album is I Killed Your Dog. It's her third studio effort. Okay, to get super nerdy here, there's a little bit of a continuum through your three records, I've noticed, right? So you have Need Be, which is kind of a revisitation or revision of Need Be from Fatigue. And then on Fatigue, you did kind of a remake of Bat from your self-titled debut.
Yeah. That's great. Someone's picking up on it.
So I wanted to talk about building a continuum through these three albums. And like we were talking about before, you haven't had a lot of time to metabolize this new album in hindsight. But talk to us a little bit about creating a thread and what your intentionality is or was there.
Yeah, I'm interested in world building, and I hope that when I create my very last album someday, that you can go through and find connections, that they're like Easter eggs for people that warrant multiple listens. And that was just like a fun compositional puzzle for me to figure out how to create a literal bridge between albums. And there's another kind of like hidden thing that I also think about, which is just having one reference to a birthday in every single record. That was just something I noticed I was doing. And so now I'm just making it a little bit more hidden, I guess. But yeah, it's a fun way of world building for me.
What is the birthday?
Well, it started out as my own birthday.
When is your birthday?
July 14th.
Cool. Yeah. So that makes you a Cancer. Very nice.
Yep.
So it started off, you said, as your own birthday.
I was looking at my own birthday, and then I started documenting other people's birthdays. I was noticing that sometimes people would come into the studio to record on their birthdays, and that became a whole thing. Like Kit Malone, when you're recording the first record, I'm forgetting now if he texted me that it was his birthday. But at some point I found out it was his birthday. And so I started noticing all of these things. I think Quentin, when he was in the studio, it was his birthday. There were all these birthdays around. And so I wanted to try to keep that in the Lorraine world somehow. And so there's one in this record. I wonder if someone will pick up on it. It's very subtle.
Oh, man. Now I'm going to have to go digging back. See, that's awesome. I love that. And by the way, mission accomplished in creating worlds. If you hadn't said it out loud, I probably would have, either to you or in the intro that I'm going to write later. That's the feeling that I get. And I also love that your albums to me feel like so fresh, but also there's like this old school thing of really wanting to listen to it as an album, like start to finish.
That's the best compliment.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Is that how you approach it? Is that how you think of it? And what goes into the sequencing?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it for me. That's also part of the reason why the albums are kind of short, is because they're kind of meant to be listened to in one sitting. And it honestly, when I listen to it, it feels like it's longer than that because there's just so much going on. But we think a lot about the sequencing. For Fatigue, we brought in our friend Slawson Malone, who's now Slawson Malone 1. And this time we were really thinking about the order of the tracks. And like, so it's something we think about sometimes when we're recording, because we want to think about like how a song will transition. And we had more people thinking about it this time. 106 Point Never was kind of involved in that process.
Wow.
And helped us with the sequencing of the record. There are a few moments, there are remnants of his original sequence. And then Ben and Andrew, my two main collaborators, and I were kind of working on the rest of the sequence together. But yeah, we think about it a lot, maybe too much.
I've read that while this is very much a collective or a band, and these collaborators have been with you for a long time, that you're conscientious or conscious of being the band leader. So can you maybe take us a little bit behind the scenes as to like, what does it look like for you to be the band leader? What is that dynamic?
Yeah, that's a great question. What is it like to be a band leader? I think a lot of times being a band leader is really glamorized. And it's actually just a lot of responsibility. I spiral about it all the time because I'm playing with my friends. And even if they were hired guns, you know, like they're people that you trust enough to learn your music. And it just requires a lot of care, and providing care takes time and resources. And so it can be really hard to just make sure that your friends feel taken care of and that they know like why you're making the decisions you're making. But at least in the musical sense, I think of the recording as the primary text. And I like to really have ownership over that like first expression. And then from there, I try to open it up a little bit to the band. And the sound of the band is really different depending on who's playing, because they're really bringing something of themselves to the live performance. And I like for people to play things that they feel really good about. So sometimes like a part that I wrote will morph a little bit, or we'll take stems of the recordings and we'll remix them a little bit, or try to approximate the sound, but don't get it exactly right. You know, right, quote unquote. But yeah, it's really like a process of discovery. And it's fun for me because we get to reinvent the songs however we want to. And I don't know, that's what makes the live show really special to me, is that it really feels like everyone is doing their thing. And then we all kind of have our thing as a band, but it really stems from everybody doing what they want to do and what feels natural and right for them.
and then in the studio. Has that role evolved over the years for you? What have you learned over the process of doing these three records? There's some consistent players. There's some people who have come and gone.
Yeah, it's hard. I think being in the studio is really hard for me because it's similar to a photograph, right? There's like a myth of it offering some kind of truth that like what you hear is what happened. And then there's a lot of, I don't know, I get very self-critical in the studio and all of my doubts and insecurities really well up in those moments. And in those moments, I'm a horrible collaborator. And so I'm really trying to think about that and think about my process. And I'm hopefully going to go back into the studio at the end of the year. So I'm like thinking about this a lot, but yeah, I think it can be really hard. And I think a lot of the insecurity also just comes from just my thinking around womanhood also of just like not wanting to seem lesser than or weaker or like I need to ask for help and like all of that stuff. Like it all just really, really comes up in the studio, especially because there's so few images of women instrumentalists, but also women in the studio and women producers. And it's hard for me sometimes to balance all of those expectations and all of those worries and insecurities and all of the just weight of all of that. I sometimes like collapse under that. But for me in the studio, I'm very lucky to have collaborators that understand this and are really very supportive, and they're trying to see my vision through. So oftentimes I'll bring a demo or a few demos and we'll talk about those. But it really starts with conversations about what we want out of a session in really broad strokes of just like where we're at, just a moment of checking in and just talking about like what we want to achieve and how we hope to work, what we hope to use and what processes and techniques we want to dive into. And from there, it's really just kind of like in service of the song. And I feel really grateful to have collaborators that really support me in that way and understand all of that. They understand my process very well too. So I didn't give a very clear depiction of what it's like to be in the studio
or what it means to be a band leader
in that way. But
I think you did. I think you were more articulate than you give yourself credit for.
Okay.
Is it okay if I jump in here and respond with a couple of thoughts?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so first of all, so funny that you said you didn't think that you were being articulate, because actually I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad to hear someone lay it out this way, because I talk to women all the time about the studio experience and we hit on a lot of things, including what a sensitive space it is and vulnerable space, but I've never quite heard anyone put it that way. And I just think you said it so beautifully about how everything kind of, I think you said, comes to the surface, right? All of the stuff around being a woman in those spaces and not seeing yourself reflected and usually being kind of isolated, though that's my word.
I agree with that.
And it's interesting because in having these conversations, like just yesterday, actually, are you familiar with the Japanese House? Do you know who she is? Amber Bain.
I don't.
She's a UK artist. She's a queer woman. She's talking about her new record and how this is the very first time that she's worked with a queer woman as her engineer and producer and how life-changing that was for her. Even though she had years and years and years of working in those spaces with people that were so supportive, as empathetic as they could for being cis white dudes, they were still dudes. And she felt like it really shifted something for her in a way that she didn't even expect until she got into the situation. And she said, you know, after experiencing that, I don't think I want to go back because it's just, there's something about being with another queer woman who can really identify with her. There's a shorthand. And it's interesting because there is such a lack of producers that are women and queer women in studio spaces, mix engineers. And then for women of color, it's like a fraction of a fraction in the production chair. And I'm sure for engineering as well. But circling back to what you were talking about your experience in university, those spaces are so unwelcoming when you're trying to just get to learn how to do the thing and get the knowledge and the language in order to enter those spaces confidently, even if you're not the one that is at the board, but you're the artist. We get so steamrolled, and then all of the internal voices are there telling us that the men know better. They just do. They know how to do it. So I don't know. There's not really a question in here, but just to like kind of respond to what you were saying, that like, I really hear you and I see you, and I love that you were able to say that so articulately and describe how that happens when you enter the space. And it makes so much sense. And also to encourage you, like at some point, maybe you want to try that. Like, I wonder what that would do for you, you know, to have a woman or a queer woman in that space that's actually like handling the boards for you.
Totally. You know, I sometimes think about just how I interact with other women musicians in my life. Yeah, it's interesting. I really think that every person that is a band leader should be in a band at some point. And I feel like that's often how I show up for other women musicians, is to like support them while they're a leader, right? And to like really try to dive into their music and their work, and to try to support it in some way. And that also just kind of made me realize that a lot of the women in my life, I think, are kind of leading their own projects. And that, I think that's an amazing thing, and also a challenge when trying to figure out how to collaborate and how to do things together.
Right.
But for me, it's really important to not be working on my own stuff sometimes, and to like dedicate time to learning other women's music and playing it, and being a side person and trying to support them.
Tasha Cheek here with us on Shiro's. The new album is I Killed Your Dog. It's been so fun to have you here. There is so much more to cover, but we did cover a whole lot of ground, and I appreciate you, and congratulations on this album, Tasha. Like I said in the beginning, it's a masterpiece. Let's do the Shiro's Magic Wand and then go out with the track. Yeah,
that sounds great.
Okay, awesome. So with the Shiro's Magic Wand, Tasha Cheek, I bestow upon you the power to change anything in music for women and queer folks. The list, I'm sure, is long. The wand might feel a little heavy. First wave of the wand, what would you change? What comes to mind?
I would make sure that women are more included in music history, and the women that were forgotten about are reinserted into their rightful place.
Hell yes. Great wish. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
How should we go out today?
Oh, man. Maybe the end of the record feels like celebratory. And I just hope people listen.
Thanks to Tasha Cheek, Lorraine. Thank you for being with us on Shiro's.
Thank you so much.
Many thanks to Tasha Cheek for being with us. The third Lorraine album, I Killed Your Dog, is available now on Mexican Summer. Shiro's is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Shiro's is also a nationally syndicated radio show. You can visit shirosradio.com to find out more and support our work with Patreon or merch from the Shiro's shop. Keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio. And please consider leaving us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps us grow and bring you more Shiro's. Until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening.